Okay, welcome to our midweek open lines. You know, we're going to have the strange open lines on Friday night, but during the middle of the week, just about anything goes. So we'll get right to your calls and see what's on your mind right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Open Lines here on Coast to Coast. Hope you enjoyed your Labor Day weekend, and that's out of the way. Next one ahead is going to be Halloween. Get ready for that. And our Ghost to Ghost show will be on Halloween Monday night. So I'm looking forward to that. And then Thanksgiving, we'll be live for you there. Christmas, New Year's, we're going to have somebody live. I think I will be live on New Year's Day, which is the first Sunday, January 1st. And then we'll have somebody live for you on Christmas Day, which will be that Sunday, to be sure. All live shows for you for the rest of the year. Let's go to John in Houston, Texas. Welcome to the program. Hi, John.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I've seen you several times on Giorgio Tsoukalos's
Ancient Aliens. Yeah.
Yeah, that thing. And I was wondering, every scientist that has spoken on your program or any other program that I've listened to has said that they cannot see or detect dark matter or dark energy, and they're looking for it. But they also say that it would be impossible for aliens or extraterrestrials to visit our planet on a regular basis because they would have to travel so far from another star system. What if they don't have to travel that far? What if they're just next door? What if all they have to do is exit the 96% of the universe that we cannot see or detect and simply come into our 4%, our cell, our little sequestered universe.
Bending, as I've always said, space and time.
By whatever means they have necessary.
Exactly. No, they're doing something that we have no idea how it works. That's for sure. If they're getting here, they're getting here in a very unconventional manner, and you may be very right. It's just like a blink like that, and here they are. Michael in Cayusa, California. Welcome, Cayusa, California. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hey, George, it's Cayucas, and I'm the identical twin who's born on your...
My birthday.
Yeah, and my mom is your birthday. Anyway, my thing is tonight, darn it, why don't we start to say all lives matter? You know, why do we have to differentiate between a race or a creed or anything else? All of our lives matter.
You're absolutely right. We shouldn't have to
single
things out.
And, you know, and another thing, when these people come to vote this year, you know, darn it, you know, I just have to say that anybody who says I'm voting for the lesser of two evils, they're still voting for evil. So vote for the right thing. Go with your heart. That's all I got to say, George. You guys have a great evening and love your program and love you.
Thanks,
and
Michael.
Everything you do.
Thanks. Tom's got a message for us, either a text or a tweet. Back there in the L.A. studios. Tom, what do you have?
That was a great call. I feel uplifted now.
I'm in St. Louis, so it's 3:14 in the morning, is bubbly as all get up.
Yeah, absolutely. This one is a text from Jerry in Portland. George, do you have a favorite news story you've reported on in the years?
Favorite news story? Well, you know, as I've told many people, I may have been the last reporter to talk with Jimmy Hoffa back in 1975.
That's so cool.
Before he disappeared. I invited him on one of our TV shows in Detroit, WJBK, Channel 2 at the time, which is a Fox TV station now. It was a CBS station. And I was the executive news producer and brought him on the set, got him interviewed, walked him out to his car, talked with him for about 20 minutes. At his car about what he wanted to do, and he wanted to come back, and he was prohibited in his probation from Nixon of running for any union office, but he wanted to run for the presidency again. And his constituents probably would have voted for him. And so he's trying to figure out how to do all that. And then he disappeared a month or so later. He was gone. But that's a story I'll always remember. There was another one where they had like six or seven murders in a house. It was a drug den in Detroit. And I remember being out there. I was just, gosh, I was a reporter and I was 21 years old. And I remember them bringing these bodies out like crazy, and I'm going, geez, I want to do this. But I'll always remember that. I interviewed Haskell Shanks. There's a picture on me. If you Google Haskell Shanks, he was an artificial heart pump recipient. And you'll see a picture of me without my mustache, 21 years old, 22 years old, standing behind him while he's waving to people, coming out with this heart pump. I'll remember that story. That was a classic.
Okay, two things. Do you have the Hoffa on tape?
No.
That would be neat to listen to.
It was a TV show that I brought him to. I didn't do the interview. I was the executive producer reporter who brought him in and got him set up, called him, set up the interview, brought him to his car, walked him out, and everything else. But the tape somewhere, the station has it someplace, I'm sure.
And I think you should tell the story of the person you interviewed. It was a long time ago. They were either a meat distributor or something.
Oh, the guy.
Or the lady in your first question.
Oh,
do you remember
God,
that story?
Yeah. No, that story was I had the sister of a dead woman and the dead woman's daughter. So you get that? You understand that?
Yeah.
On the set, talking to me, it was a radio show, my Nighthawk show, talking to me about why they were so upset that the dead woman's boyfriend was being released from jail on minimal manslaughter charges. And apparently what had happened was the guy came home, she was cooking him a steak, it was all gristly, and he didn't like it, and he took the steak, the entire steak, and jammed it down her throat, and she choked to death. And they thought that, this was murder, he should have been put away for, 40 years. And so I'm interviewing them, and they're crying, they're all upset, and as God is my judge, my first question to them, because they asked to come down on the show, was, what's your beef?
God.
And I heard that. And then he started crying even more.
Oh, no.
But, I interviewed a urologist. His name was Dr. Lovingood. That was his last name.
Did the people
God, he's a urologist,
with the
Dr.
beef
Lovingood.
Lady, with the beef lady, did like all the techs just look at you and like, oh, my God.
Well, at the time, I was running my own board, so okay. I just had my producer, Howard, and he was in the back just shaking his head. And, it's just one of those things that you go right over your head.
Wow, man.
What's your beef?
Well, by the way, I'm going to tell you, on Friday, I'll have an update on Vernon the dog.
That is the dog that has the prosthetic leg, right?
They needed to do that on him, so I'll have some info Friday.
And we did a fundraiser.
Yes. Correct.
Which was very successful. All right. Thanks, Tom.
Okay.
Back to the phones we go. Let's go out to Race in Oklahoma. Good morning, Race. Thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning, George. Hey, you guys need to take that show on the road. I was laughing my hair off during that time. That was great. Honor and pleasure to speak with you, George. I was just wondering if you've ever heard of or covered on the show exploding head syndrome. I wanted to ask you that last week.
What the heck is that? What is that?
Oh, it is the most horrifying thing that I think a human can go through. It happened to me once in my life. I'm 47 years old. This was about 2 years ago. And I was in a pretty deep state of relaxation or doing some deep breathing. And it feels like the only way I can describe it is like a nuclear, at the core of a nuclear explosion, whatever that thing makes. It's a bang, pow, pop, clashed. Just imagine the biggest firework boom or explosion.
Yeah.
Maybe cymbal clash, 357 Magnum, 12-gauge shotgun, car crash. All of those, squeeze every one of those sounds into maybe 0.2 of a second and come right out the top of your head.
Wow.
I was very, very upset when this happened to me. I looked it up on the internet, and apparently it's a pretty common syndrome around the world. Some people are plagued by it on almost a nightly basis. This has only happened to me one time, but it was absolutely the most incredible. Anyway, I could describe it to you for 20 minutes.
What causes it?
Exploding head syndrome. It is absolutely the most horrifying. You're absolutely sure that someone has crept on you and maybe blown your head off from the top of your head with maybe a 357 Magnum.
It's not like a tumor or anything, is it?
No, apparently not. Apparently it comes between sleep stages. When you're passing between sleep stages, but since this happened to me about 2 years ago, I've wanted to call in, and I caught about the last 45 minutes of the guy talking about the brain tonight. Fascinating. Love it when you cover the brain. It's perfect. And I just want to go ahead, I want to chime in on last week, your guest, I forget his name, forgive me, but when he said that consciousness is simply a physical manifestation of the brain. There's no soul, there's no after, there's no before. And I have to vehemently disagree with your guest from last week that said that consciousness is simply a, give me the word, George.
A physical state.
Physical state. Absolutely, and I've always felt this, and but since the birth of my son, I absolutely believe that there's more.
Yes.
There's more to consciousness, and I believe that that I've heard you say that you believe in a higher.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to go ahead and say that, but you shouldn't, or you could, I should say. Look into this exploding head syndrome. It is absolutely one of the most horrifying things that a human can go through.
And it just goes away when it's done?
It lasts maybe 0.1 of a second. It is every loud... I don't know if you've ever been around handguns, but there's a crack sound.
I've got handguns.
Whip. Yeah. Cymbals, explosion, boom, bang, pow, ping, ping. Any crashing sound, and it hits so fast and so hard, and it takes you, well, me personally, it took me about 10-12 seconds to recover from it, to realize that I was still alive,
I'll check into it. I mean, that's a bizarre syndrome, and I will check into it. Every once in a while, what I hear, I'll wake up. It's like the doorbell. Somebody rang the doorbell. I'll hear a gong, and nobody's there. I mean, there's nobody there. And it's not a short circuit or anything like that. But my brain goes off like a bell, and I'm okay. But it's weird. But I'll check into that syndrome. East of the Rockies, Ernie is truck driving in Michigan. Welcome to the show. Hi, Ern.
Oh, I wanted to tell you about, I really loved the show last night with Jesse Ventura. I tried calling in, but I wanted to tell you about my dealings with the law and growing marijuana here in Michigan.
Well, sure, what happened?
I was at work, and the wife was at work, and I got to tell you what low-life scum the Michigan State Police narcs are. Somebody had squealed on me. And it's like a witch hunt, you know. And they came to my house, and they muscled their way in on my kids, you know. And they didn't have a warrant or nothing. They give them this line about probable cause and all that. And so they sent the deputy sheriff to work to get me. And I come home, and they had I had 43 seedlings that had just broken up to the ground. And when I wasn't growing it for me because I wasn't smoking at the time. This friend of mine, his wife, this was before the medical marijuana law here in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
His wife had MS, and I was giving it to them, and it was like a miracle drug for her.
Oh, absolutely.
And he was dealing off the excess, you know, because he had to quit his job to take care of her, and they were living on her Social Security disability, and they had a family, and then he had to sell his cars and everything, and had no money or anything, and I was trying to help them as best as I could. And then when I got to court, this is where the state police scum thing comes in. There was six more plants a foot tall that they had gotten from somewhere else, and they were trying to blame, they were blaming them on me.
Oh, false evidence, and, false evidence, right?
Yeah, but I couldn't prove otherwise. And so when it come down to go to court, they were trying to get me for $500,000 fine, 7 years in prison.
Oh, my God.
And so my lawyer, his son-in-law, was the prosecutor that day, and he cut me a deal. And I got 2 years probation, and they lowered it down to possession, and that was $100 fine, $1,000 court costs. I had to pay $150 to have the plants tested, and then I had to pay into the, like, the Women's Abuse Fund and a couple other funds.
Yeah.
I paid in, and with the lawyer and everything, it cost me about $3,500.
Could have been worse. Could have been worse, then, Ernie.
Yeah. And they wanted me to squeal on somebody else, you know, and I told them, no, I could have, because I'd been around it for years and years and years and knew a lot of people and a lot of things going on. And, you know, and I said, no, I'll take my punishment. And so I went and seen the probation officer about four or five times, and she told me, she said, just pay up and get out. There ain't no sense in you coming back.
Yeah, just be done. And it's really ridiculous. It should be legalized for medicinal purposes alone. And I'm glad 25 states plus and D.C. have approved it for that. Obviously, they know it works. But, I mean, our jails have got at least 40,000 people in there because of marijuana offenses. 750,000 people are arrested every year because of it. One out of eight federal prisoners are marijuana-related. I mean, we need to change things in this country, and we need to change things drastically. Folks, by the way, on November 8th, which is only a couple months away now, we will be doing our election coverage, as every station will be, but we will be live for the entire 5 hours program with special guests. They'll all be coming in, offering their analysis. I think it's going to be a long night. I don't think we're going to get a clear-cut winner very quickly at all. Could be wrong, but I just don't think we will. Anyway, we're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with the more of your phone calls on open lines. On our next Coast to Coast program, Jonathan Kahn joins us as we talk about his new work, The Book of Mysteries. So you definitely don't want to miss that. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you in our final segment of Open Lines here. And let us not waste any time. Let's go to Frank in Hollywood, Maryland. Hey, Frank, good morning.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you. November will be 9 years with you on Coast to Coast. It has been an exercise in excellence, and I don't issue accolades easily, but I've learned so much from this show.
Thank you.
Now, you just announced that Jonathan Kahn will be on tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to talk about music tonight because the Freddy and the Dreamers, that song brought back old memories.
Sure.
But if I can't get on tomorrow night, would you do me a favor and ask him two questions for me? Write them down, and just in case I can't get on tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
I will do the best I can.
All right. On in prophecy, why is it that last time he was on, he said something about we defy God by rebuilding after 9/11, rebuilding the tower?
Mm-hmm.
I want to know how he thinks about that. I want to get some kind of answer about that. And then the second question is, when Solomon's temple has to be rebuilt before the end of the world, now, will this come about by hook or crook? Because in prophecy, does it have to happen because terrorists will do something with the Dome of the Rock?
Okay.
Try to blow it up or something. Will you ask him, if I don't get on tomorrow night, ask him those two questions?
Okay, we'll try to do that. We'll see if you get on first. Tell me, though, about your Freddie and the Dreamers. I played that song. It's a great song.
Okay, you remember the song. You're old enough to remember the song. I don't know if Tommy is or not, but the music to it, that's got Buddy Holly DNA written all over it.
Yeah.
And you remember the dance where you lift your left leg?
Yeah, and the right leg, and you touch your hands?
Yeah. Okay, he was part of the British invasion. When you played at 2 o'clock the other night in Dusty Springfield, there's a kindred between you and me. I'll explain that another time, but the bumper music is so great that I got this idea that if you were to pipe Frank Sinatra music and classic music into the prisons, I would bet that after a year or so, just continually pipe it in, that the criminals would improve in their behavior.
You know what? You might be right, Frank. That's an interesting twist. Tom, you've got another text or tweet for us back there?
We certainly do, George. This is a tweet coming in, and it's from CR, and he says, George, what do you think about the show The X-Files?
The new one or the old one?
He doesn't
say.
By
the way, my speaker's up there. Just turn it off.
Your speaker's not on.
Yeah, sure it is. I'm getting feedback. There you go.
It must be your phones.
But with the new one or the old one?
And he doesn't say.
The new one, the old one was great.
Yes.
The new one, not as great, I don't think. It was nice, but I think the first one, the first series was really well done.
I read something that they didn't always get along in the old series.
The two of them,
Scully
and Mulder?
Yeah.
Well,
interesting.
That's always possible. You never know.
Okay,
good
stuff.
Tom. Next up, we go to Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, go ahead.
All right. Hold on 1 second, George.
Sure thing.
I know you're going to come to me so fast. How you doing, George?
Gotcha.
Okay. Listen, George, I just want to set the record straight for everybody. This is the way the media and these political parties manipulate our thought process. Here's example A, textbook example. Okay, all this talk about the money that we gave to Iran, right?
Right.
Okay, that $400 million was owed to Iran from the 1970s.
That's right. It was after the Shah left, we never paid them, apparently.
Right. After the Shah left, we never gave them the jet fighters that they wanted because they took our hostages. So, which means we were holding their $400 million.
What a deal, huh?
Now, the $1.3 billion added on to it is the interest that represents the estimated interest. That's from 1981 all the way to now, George. See, the case just got settled now.
That's right.
The case was in arbitration for 35 years at the Hague Court in the Netherlands.
I think, though, Wayne, we used it as a crutch to get those four hostages out.
Absolutely. What happened was we told the Iranians, okay, we owe you this money. Actually, George, we owed them about $10 billion. So the United States took the case out of the Hague, took it settled out of court. So what the Obama administration did was save the taxpayers billions of dollars.
Interesting take there, too. Hey, by the way, 57 years this year that our friend Morgus has been Morgus the Magnificent. 57 years. I remember him as a kid growing up in Detroit. He started in New Orleans. He's back in New Orleans now. But 57 years ago, he started doing his Morgus shows. He came in years ago to surprise me, and something happened. Some of you have heard this. Some of you have not. Wildcard Line, welcome to the program. You're on the air. Hi.
Door, that door there?
Hello.
Hello, George.
Morgus.
George Morgus in New Orleans.
How are you?
Oh, George, am I glad to get to you.
My
you know, our telephones were all down through the hurricane, and of course we've got it all fixed up now, and I'm really, really moving along with this lab now, George.
Oh, so thank God. You know, we talked to you briefly after Katrina, but your phone went out, and we didn't know what happened to you. So you're okay, and your family's okay?
Oh, George, listen, everybody, Chopsley's right here, Dr. Chopsley's here, and Eric, everybody's in good shape here. You know, George, we didn't evacuate over there, because I'll tell you why. The city, you know, had a mandatory evacuation, but there's no way I would ever leave this lab, George. You know what's in here.
What is there?
Oh, you know, George, come on, you know, some secret stuff we talked about. And granted, you know, everybody would like to get in here. This is why we've got to stay here and protect it. I tell you, no, and besides, I'm probably the only building in New Orleans that had electricity and utilities 24/7, you know.
Well, I'm glad they're rebuilding. I'm glad you're rebuilding. And now you were in the city ice house, right? What happened to that?
Well, which one, George? What was that?
Weren't you in the ice house?
Well, absolutely. You know, this has been here about 200 years. It was an old tanning factory. It used to be alligator skins and muskrats, you know. But back in the late 1800s, one of the first ice houses in the South. And, of course, we got a hold of it in the 50s here. You were in Detroit at that time.
Yes. Watching you on television.
That's right, sir. Listen, this was fantastic. Imagine us about 50 getting together. But, George, listen, I've got something. Why I called you is, you don't know it, but I need that audience of yours to know what we're doing here in New Orleans. George, I've come up with something. You know, I've been working with, you know, all kind of microbiology. I've been working with all of the molecular designs for new inventions. And now I've got something, George, that's just going to break your heart. We have, right here in the lab, George, I was working with subatomic particles, and get this, George.
What did you uncover?
Uncover? Listen, I have moved solid molecules across this building. George, I have moved myself with solid molecules through this machine. Chopsley, get away from the machine. I have moved myself out of this room where I am now into a room down the hallway. Electronically, George.
You teleport.
I just wanted your people there to know that I could do this. Chopsley, get away from the not yet. Boy, all right, Chopsley. Let's do it for George here. Don't press that button. Press the other button. Press it. Go ahead. That's it.
What's going on?
I'll tell you what's going on. I'm in your studio, George.
I'm in your studio now, George.
The real Morgus is here. Get over here.
How did you do that? I tell you, George, this has been a thrill.
You guys were in on this.
The whole bunch were in on this, George. Let me tell you, you had Tom, you had Steve, you had Lisa, you had Craig, the kitchen, you had Trevor, Oliver, and the whole gang in this building. They love you, George.
This is incredible.
They brought me here in a company jet.
Are you kidding me?
Absolutely. Private jet all the way here, George.
They've never flown me in the company jet.
They haven't shown you the company jet, have they?
No, not at all.
Well, you don't want to, George. They stopped in Tijuana with me. I mean, it was wonderful. But they did it all for you, George. You know why? Because they knew you were going to be leaving for Christmas,
yes.
And they wanted to give you a little Christmas early and a surprise they thought you might appreciate. Have your old friend from Detroit come here
gift.
45 years later to see you again.
This is incredible.
You
talk about surprise. What are the odds of coming up with a surprise hotline?
These guys
I had no idea.
These guys did it, you know what? And I tell you what, I was going to bring something here for them, but the transformation, of course, was just incredible. Just coming here like this, and, of course, your audience knows that we just pulled a little trick on you here, that I really didn't transport myself like that.
I've got to tell you, we have such heavy security, and to see you come bolting into the studio kind of shocked the heck out of me.
Well, George, have I changed?
Actually, you look younger.
I do? Oh, my gosh, no wonder. Well, that must be the new treatment I'm on. But, George, I tell you what, just being here and seeing the studio you guys work out of is really something incredible.
It's a little different than the ice house, isn't
it? I'll tell you what, that's for sure thing, and I'm sure the rent is a little higher, too. George?
What do you think?
Well, let me put it this way. If I could get everyone listening to this program to get on the same level I am on, and I know this sounds like braggadocio to some people, but, you know, take it as it will. But, friends, I can guarantee you, you can use the mind to do wonderful things. George, you more than anyone know the psychokinesis thing, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, guys, I tell you what, you know the astronaut Edgar Mitchell?
I know him real well.
You
He's
do?
Been on the program several times.
Oh, really?
Dear
well,
friend.
Well, has he talked about this?
Yes, he has.
Well, I'll tell you that. You know,
a wonderful guy.
You know that the mind has unbelievable potential. And I can tell you right now, you know, if you were smart, George, really smart, if you were up in my level, now I'm not putting you down. I'm not putting you down, George, but listen to this. I want these people
not
to hear
many
this.
People are up to your level.
Well, intellectually,
as much as we might try.
Well, intellectually, I've got to say that because I've got to let them know that there's a chance for everyone to get up there with me, friends. You see, when you're my... Well, you're at my intellect. You cannot do violent things. When you go back the years, well, we're going back to the hominins. You know what a hominin is, you know?
Yeah.
We're talking about people that lived 18 million years ago. They were throwing rocks at each other. And what are they doing over here in France tonight?
They're still throwing rocks.
George, an intelligent person like myself wouldn't do that. If a mugger came up to me right now and said, fella, I'm going to give it to you in the face, you know what? He couldn't hurt me, George. He could not hurt me. You know why?
Why?
I have mind control, George. I can control his mind. I can stop him in his tracks. Now, George, you're going to witness this. You know I'm in your studio tonight.
Yes, you are.
I'm going to do it. Before we leave, I want you to come up to me and you try to take a punch at me.
I can't take a swing at you. And I know you want me to, and you think you can stop my arm in mid-motion, but...
Well, I could do it, George. You know, it's you have to put yourself in a, well, what we call a precognition mode. What we're doing is we're going into abilities just like you have telepathy or we have clairvoyance. I have mind control. And once you put this precognition state into your body, which I can do just like snapping a finger, it's amazing what happens, George, with the mind being able to control. It's like putting waves through the air. You won't feel it until you try to hit me. And then you stop. You can't do it. I'm walking up to you right now. Now, look, now don't get frightened now. You're my buddy. Nothing's going to happen to me.
Okay.
Nothing's going to happen to me. All right.
I would kick myself for the rest of my life.
I want you to give me the best you've got, George. Okay? Swing back. You ready? One, two. Put it right here against your cheek. Go ahead. Go ahead, hit it. Go ahead.
You ready?
Ready. Go ahead.
Oh, gosh.
Well, George. Oh, well, that sheet, I didn't hurt at all, George.
Hand me the thing.
You have a handkerchief?
Unbelievable.
Oh, God, this is embarrassing.
You,
Chopsley?
You assured me.
Yeah, what? Well.
This would work.
You know, George, I'm in a different atmosphere around here. This place, you know, you've got black walls, and you've got kind of Craig lights. I mean, why do you have it moody in here?
I feel so rotten.
Oh, gosh.
Are you okay?
I'm okay. I like my tooth. I only have four teeth, George. I think you loosened one of them.
Well, why did you...
Don't worry about it, George. We're still friends forever. Don't worry about it. I'll fix it, George. Boy. Well, anyway,
every experiment you do,
George,
something goes wrong.
George, I think it's the lighting in here. I honestly believe it is. This is embarrassing, and I know people will fall out of love for me, but I tell you, friends, it has a great deal to do.
I just want to make sure you're okay.
Oh, I'm perfectly fine, George. No, everything's fine.
Not that you have many teeth left anyway.
Everything's fine. No, all four of them are okay. But nonetheless, it's such a surprise to, you know, have the opportunity to try something in front of the whole world here and have a little discrepancy take place.
Millions of listeners.
Oh, listen, I
maybe
I
more
don't
than
hold
your
it again.
TV show.
Well, I would not hold this against you, George, and I hope people that heard this will just... In fact, you know what? I can make them forget it, George. I have the
problem. No more experiments.
No, but I don't want them to remember this tomorrow.
No, they may forget everything, and we don't want that to happen.
They permeate the whole show.
That could be. 57 years of Morgus, huh? One of a kind. For Nathan Staton, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.